All right. Welcome to the work session for Monday, June 15th. Roll call, Councilmember Stacy.
Here.
Councilmember Tease.
Here.
Councilmember Hartman.
Here.
Councilmember Otto.
Here.
Mayor Evans is also here, and city staff is also in attendance. Looking for an approval of the agenda.
A motion.
Motion made by Otto, seconded by Tease. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. On to three. 3.1, Aquatic Center Closing Date. Administrator Meyer.
Thank you, Mayor Evans. You requested that this be brought forward on a work session. Since the opening of the Aquatic Center, the city has always opened it the weekend after school lets out and runs through Labor Day weekend, but depending on weather, with some limited hours due to staffing. As well as the end of Labor Day on Monday is our closing for the season. However, for 2026, the school resumes classes on August 31st, which is before Labor Day weekend. So we would not be open during that week due to staffing. However, a discussion before council, do you want to reopen simply for the three-day weekend, or do you just want to call the weekend before the final weekend? So
perfect. Okay, so yes, sorry, I forgot, but I did ask for this to come forward. This went to Public Works, and Otto and Stacy said they were good with it closing early, or they said it was fine if that's what we wanted to do. I wanted to bring it forward because it is Labor Day, and pool is our big summer attraction, and so I wanted to have a whole council have a discussion on what we want to do. So it would be closed. So what is August 31st? Sorry, I don't have a calendar. Is that
August 31st is Monday.
So school starts on that Monday.
Correct.
And it'll go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
I believe that's the calendar. I just know it starts before Labor Day week.
Okay. So then we would be closed those days, and then we would reopen Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
If the council wants
to do it, or we just close on Sunday, August 30th, and then that's the pool is closed. So for discussion.
I'm sure the workforce has to be impacted significantly around that time. College students and whatnot?
Yeah, so the college students, we will lose most of them mid-August. That's why we start to regulate hours. You see us start trending down in hours towards mid-August to later August. So we lose most of them at that timeline. And then the remaining will be back in school when school starts session again on August 31st. So that's why it would be closed during that week. And the determination whether or not we want to maintain facility and concessions and clean. I mean, it still has to be cleaned and all of that every day. If we want to maintain that and then open for the three-day weekend, or if you want to just close it on the 30th, but the council needs to make that decision, and we'd like to make an announcement one way or another.
For our conversation, you are confident that if we decide to stay open, we could find staff to run it?
I'm good with closing it early. It makes sense to me. I understand that it is an attraction for the summer for our community. If advance notice is out, to your point, as soon as possible, then hopefully people can make different arrangements for that weekend. It's a little bit of a cost savings as well.
I would agree with that.
Just hear me out. Hear me out. We lose money at the pool. It's our one big thing that we have. It's 3 days. Let the people use it for 3 days.
I think it adds operating cost of 8 days.
Well, how much?
They're not gonna drain it on August 30th anyway. So they're gonna have to clean it. They're gonna have to do all that maintenance stuff anyways.
Just to clarify, once the pool is done, we shut all chemical feeds off, and yeah, we won't drain it immediately that day. But typically, it's within the next work week. We'd start the maintenance prep. But again, totally up to you guys. You do stay open. My person has come in 3 times. Well, an additional time after hours, Monday through Friday, to check it because it's still operating mode, swimming. So there's cost to it. Just
how much? Any idea how much we save by not opening for the weekend?
I did not run those calculations. We'd have to look at labor as well as all of the other amenities. I didn't run the calculation. It was at a discussion point. If you want that information, I can get it to council.
I think I'd like to see it. If it's going to be a point of discussion and it's going to go forward in any way, I would like to see that just for decision-making reasons, unless the council today decides not to close it on the 31st, or before the 31st, I should say.
I love the pool. I have a season pass. My kids love the pool. I love the fact that we have it for the kid, our children in this community. I say it time and time again at parks commissions or this council. I'd much rather see the kids spending their free time in a controlled environment such as the pool. It's healthy, constructive, outdoor athletics. I'm okay with it. Closing at August 31st, I think that's reasonable. I think depending on the year, Labor Day falls on different times of the year. August 31st is this end of summer to me. And again, if you give advance warning, it's June 15th. Hopefully people can make different arrangements for that weekend.
Okay. There's one to close. Luke?
I'm not really sure at the moment.
Okay. Shane?
I would also move to close on the 30th.
Yeah, close.
All right, you got consensus.
Okay, so that direction is that we'll make the announcement that the pool season, the aquatic center season, will end early, which would be on that Sunday prior to Labor Day weekend, correct? Okay, thank you.
Okay, 3.2, wastewater thank treatment you. Facility.
He may know.
Engineer Duncan. Gunner?
Mayor, Council, so we had a discussion and a work session talking about the wastewater treatment facility and talking about the expansion and also the renovation of the current facility. We are nearing capacity. We know we are looking at a project. At that time, Council wanted to wait to see if legislation had funded a grant that we qualify for. However, we did not make the funding cut this March. So after the legislative session, that grant for the PSIG, which I'll let everybody else jump in on what the acronym stands for, but that grant was funded a very small amount this year, small in terms of when you talk about wastewater treatment facilities, they are large expenses. That fund was given about $30 million for the grants. The grant is awarded in March of each year, end of March. I have Gunner and Joe here to talk about if we choose to wait, where we landed on, we had provided you before where we were on the list of projects being funded and how they didn't have enough money to make it down as far as we were on the list. So we can talk about that, as well as if we choose to wait, do we need to reapply or does our previous application stand? So I'm gonna have Joe and Gunner kind of take over from there, conversation, we decided we were going to wait on the project to find out if there was any funding. Now we want to talk about there is funding and whether or not waiting and reapplying for it till next March is the direction the council wants to go. So, Joe?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to jump in here and say Gunner's got this. No, I'm just he's obviously the wastewater expert here. This is a very nuanced program, as are a number of the programs that come out of the state. This one has a little twist to it in terms of how do you qualify and how many times you have to, you know, reapply or you don't, and he's going to answer those with his, you know, overall assessment of where we're at with this, and then certainly, you know, any questions you've got, just put them out there to make sure that we all understand we're all on the same page. So I'll turn it over to Gunner.
Gunner, can you just introduce yourself and your title and stuff for the audience and the
people online? Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm Gunner Kern. I'm an engineer at Bolton & Mink, a water wastewater project manager. And I've been tracking and leading this wastewater project since 2021 when we started the facility plan. So back in April, we went over kind of the history, and we're going to wait for a bonding bill to see if whether we had more PSIG funding. Good news, there is PSIG, more PSIG funding. I guess the optimistic viewing of it is we're hoping Belle Plaine scores high enough on that list to fall within that, I'm going to quote-unquote, fundable range on that PSIG list. One thing about that is I don't know whether for sure Belle Plaine's project is going to until our list comes out here at the end of the year. But the good news is the governor did sign that bill a couple weeks ago. So we have $30 million in the PSIG program that wasn't there before. Belle Plaine qualifies for PSIG because of the phosphorus limit that the city received here a few years ago. So the PCA signed that phosphorus limit, and that's PSIG program understand. It was made because the state understands that cities can't just go and fund large $30 million projects just like Belle Plaine without any supplemental funding. So with that, we were going to wait for the bonding bill here, which happened, and right now we're still waiting to see whether Belle Plaine falls within that fundable range. We did some theoretical math with our funding group. I'm going to say theoretical math, but the way I see it is Belle Plaine has a good chance of qualifying for those funds needed in the PSIG program. So another, I guess, piece of that puzzle, though, is this bonding bill only happens through a legislative session, and those legislative sessions only happen in even number years. So unless we have a special session in between now and 2028, I don't see this PSIG program getting funded between 2026 and 2028 any more than it currently is. So with that, I guess to go back to Don on the decision to either wait or move forward, it is really why I'm here today.
Gunner, can you just, again, our overall estimate for the wastewater treatment facility, the overall cost in today's dollars, and the amount of funding we qualified for through the last, where we didn't get funded because there wasn't enough money.
Yeah.
If you can just clarify that.
So, to clarify, our project estimates right now fall in that 29 to 34, $35 million range. Currently, and the city qualifies through the PSIG program to have 21% of that project covered for that PSIG grant that's available. So what we're looking at is 21% of the project costs through that grant is what we're looking at right now.
It was just over $8 million last year, correct?
$7 million.
$7 million?
Six to $7 million.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I think what I would add, too, is the nuance about this particular program is, you know, if you qualify for that and you make the list, it's really a function of when you make the list. And then, for example, if you're on the list in 2026, you're competing with those other facilities that are also in that queue for 2026 and what's in front of you, right? And then it goes by points. So it's a little bit different than some state funding programs where it's just a points only thing. And so there's less likelihood that somebody just comes in and jumps over the top of you or advances in front of you because of the timing aspect of it, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, the city had our plans and specs here certified in September of 2025, which would put us at what we believe would be the fiscal year of 2026 through the state. So any other projects that were certified in 2026 are the projects that, you know, Belle Plaine would ultimately be scored against. Plus, there's still projects on the list that were certified in years prior, going back to all the way to 2022. So those previous years qualify or are higher on the list than the later years are.
Okay. I got some questions. Okay, so we did this in 22 and didn't get PSIG funding, right?
I think the first time we qualified,
24?
We applied was 2024.
24, okay. Yeah. And it was $24 million for the project, didn't get PSIG funding. Then we applied the next time, didn't get PSIG funding. It was 28 million.
Yeah.
Now it's 31 million. We didn't get PSIG funding. And now we're sitting at this point. And if we wait till next year, hopefully we get PSIG funding. But PSIG funding is only 30 million instead of what was it last time? It was over 30 million, was it not?
I don't remember what it was last year.
I believe it was over 30 million.
It changes from a year, from session to session. So, yeah.
So we just keep kicking the can down the road here. And so you say you like our chances of getting this funding. But then we sit there next year. I mean, eventually you've passed the break even, right? I mean, you've passed it, right? Eventually the money you're saving with this grant, you've already blown past if you would have just did it the first time. You've already blown past that number, so you should have done it.
Yep. So, yeah, sorry to interrupt. But, yeah, that was our discussion back in April is we have this project. Inflation on water and wastewater infrastructure is not slowing down that we see right now. And going back to, do we move forward without that PSIG funding? That seems more financially viable if we have to wait 3, 4, 5 more years. And being the state of the wastewater plant that it is in, too, that also has to be considered in the decision.
I think the last time I brought that discussion here, we had that kind of brief analysis of kind of where the breakpoint was. And I don't even think it was that far out, Gunnar. I think when we talked about it, there was initial discussion of, hey, there's a point of diminishing returns that's probably more like 2 years out. But I think the component of this, and I'm not trying to step on your touchdown call, but ultimately there's a way to continue moving this project forward while that list ultimately is created by the MPCA about who's going to get the funding, right? So there's a period of time that before that list comes out, but there's things that we can be doing coincidentally during that time keeps this project moving forward.
Perfect.
I have the chart. I'm just trying to blow it up so we can all read it here.
Perfect.
Yep.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I just had
Hartman and then Peace has questions.
Sorry, a few inquiries. One, does that 21% remain? Is there a cap on 21%? If the price goes up, does that 21% number go up?
21% of the project is what the PCA certified. So they took it in current dollars and the current estimate, and they took that and submitted that, and they got a percentage point from that, those two estimates, and then they submitted that to the PFA, qualifying the project for 21%
PCA. So is there a cap on that 21% is what I guess is my question.
Not right. No. That's what you're certified for right now.
Got it.
So
if you're looking at the chart, Councilmember Hartman, it shows the percentage, and as the cost increases, the percentage increases with that.
Mm-hmm. As long as there's money.
As long as there's money to fund it, correct.
I think what he's asking is there's a number of communities on this list that are at $12 million exactly. Is that a capped dollar amount that?
Yeah. Yes. So $12 million is the cap on PSIG.
Okay.
Yes, that's
okay. There is a cap. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't understand.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I wasn't saying it right. And then my second question is, I guess this is more tailored towards staff. Our wastewater billing is calculated to cover this moving forward. So while we haven't started building or construction, are we starting to build behind it?
Yep. So cash is being put into the capital so that you're not looking at borrowing the full $31 million or whatever dollar amount it comes in at. So remember, the finances for the first wastewater system, treatment system that was built, we just paid that off, right? And so what we were paying towards that is now being put into capital,
mm-hmm.
so that when this project moves forward, the city has a cash balance, and it's built in through all of the planning.
Thank you.
I think you mentioned the break-even point. I think the point of diminishing returns really yep. comes at 2.5 to 3 years, right? Our annual increase from inflationary cost on construction is about 10%, call it $3.1 million a year. So that makes sense to me. I'm glad that you brought up the idea of continuing to move the project forward as they process that for next year. That was going to be something that I wanted to see if that was an opportunity for us. But are there other funds that are potentially available, like the Clean Water Revolving Fund or the Water Infrastructure Fund? Are those things that we can look into and try to take advantage of?
So the city's already on getting the low interest loan through the Clean Water Revolving Fund. And PSIG is actually funded through that fund as well.
Okay.
The WIF, so Water Infrastructure Fund, we've been applying for that every year on behalf of the city of Belle Plaine. They have loans through WIF, but they also have what's called affordability grants. So if you qualify, based off, they analyze your finance, the city's finances, and if you qualify, there's affordability grants, meaning that if you were to pursue the project and your rates had to pay off that loan, had to be increased above 1.4% of the median household income, then you would qualify for those grants, and you could be supplemented that way as well. And that's something that we haven't seen any successful, I guess would be the word, applicant for this project due to the fact that you don't have debt service on the wastewater plant currently,
yeah.
is what I'm assuming why.
Do you know how close we are to that 1.4%?
I don't know right off the top of my head, no.
Okay. That's all from me.
Okay. Councilmember Stacey?
No questions.
Councilmember Brado?
I guess just to reiterate that this is all paid for by Enterprise Fund, which is the sewer and water, obviously. Not directly our tax dollars, so it is a little different the way we're looking at it. That's about it, really.
Okay.
We all toured it. We all seen the condition of everything.
And yeah. I think the note of its capacity and
yeah.
requirements that we have to meet in certain timelines as well.
It is our bottleneck to economic development, really. I think that's the best probably way to say it. Ooh. It is the bottleneck to our economic development within the community, which inevitably raises the tax revenue and helps offset some of the pain that we all feel.
I don't mean to keep continuing on this topic, but this will also speak to that requirement through Met Council. Instead of out to Roberts Creek, that line will be diverted directly into the river, right?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah, that's part of this project.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I agree with Councilmember Teese that it's definitely the bottleneck. We've had some pretty positive conversations with different developers and different organizations and stuff. And so this helps us move that along. So are you looking for, like,
we're looking for direction. Gunnar can jump back in, but we're looking for direction. I think Gunnar had sort of given a, you could do this while we wait for that sort of scenario, if that's what you're looking at, or is it don't do anything until we know more about this grant funding, or is it we have to move forward? That's what we're looking for, so we know what our next steps are. So, Gunnar?
Yeah, sure. For next steps, we touched briefly on this back in April. There's a couple of options to solicit bids for this project. One of those options is the traditional bid-build idea. That's what you're familiar with Engineer Joe, Joe's projects. Another option for water and wastewater projects is what's called Construction Manager at Risk, CMAR. Is the acronym. It's a way of soliciting bids that still qualifies for state funding, but it's not something that's super, it hasn't been used a lot until recently. So we're still getting familiar with it. I've gotten a couple projects that I've done with it so far. And one that CMAR, it takes time to hire a CMAR, so we got to go through a RFQ process. We have to go through an interview process, and then we have to award a contract and negotiation process through pre-construction services with them. So I've had both positive and negative experiences, both with CMAR and traditional bid build, and I can see the pros and cons in either one. But they're both options. One of the major pros a lot of communities see with the CMAR option is they're able to sit in a room with who they're going to hire construct their project and interview them face to face and decide based off of that versus getting to bid day and going with the low bidder. So with that, it takes a couple months to go through that CMAR hiring process. And then the CMAR is also going to take a month or two to provide comments, constructability comments, as well as getting to know the project. So it's going to take like up to 4 months to go through the whole process. So that puts us into this fall, which would then be when our list, our funding lists are released. So
with that, Gunner's going is if we're considering the CMAR, you could start that process.
That's something that we can start. Yeah, today.
You know, you can direct staff to begin that process, which is put out the RFQ, get the information. Those interviews would be scheduled and then go through that process. You can start that without jeopardizing waiting for the grant information, the funding list.
Yes. Yep.
If we're going the traditional
bid build, it's still going to take a couple months to update plans. So they're bid ready. So, you know, relatively shorter timeline, but I believe the city wants to wait until we have a true spot on that PSIG list before moving forward, or whether we know we have a spot either way.
Okay. So if you're going traditional, we'd probably wait before you told us to advertise for bids till we're closer to that timeline. If you're looking at, let's go the CMAR direction, we could probably start that process with some direction now.
Okay. Well, questions?
A couple of things I'd add, just kind of, you know, understanding this process a little bit more, as it is a little bit of a departure than, say, what your infrastructure projects and how they solicit their bidders, right? Because of the nature of these projects and how large they tend to get dollar-wise, you see more and more contractors entering this arena and staying there because it's something that they feel is better for their business, right? So they tend to
specialize too.
What's that?
They specialize.
Yeah, they tend to specialize that. And you want a good product out of this. We all want a good product out of it, right? And sometimes you, when you get into the low bid, just strictly low bid, and that's all you're focused on, that may be not guaranteed, right? You're still going to get in the hiring process here, you're still going to get a maximum bid? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, right? It's called a GMP. So we go that's kind of going down the line of the pull process. But you go through pre-construction once you hire a CMAR. And once you go through pre-construction, the contractor or the CMAR and the city and the engineer all sit in a room and we're presented with a GMP at the end of pre-construction. At that time, that kind of takes place of what your bid would be on bid day. So with that GMP, if the city likes the GMP and they want to move forward, they accept it, and then we move forward with construction. We don't like it, and we don't like the CMAR, we can always take an off-ramp and go the traditional bid process, too. So you can always take an off-ramp and go that way.
Yeah. You're not locked into CMAR. If something correct. Happens along the way, there's a way off.
Yeah, but what have your costs been for that CMAR from there to from point A, from start to wherever you decide to go divert?
You said cost benefits?
No, what's the cost?
To get to that.
Oh, sorry, the pre-construction fee of the CMAR. So is really what you're out is that pre-construction fee, which in my experience has been a very minor fee for that service from
there. And you'll know what that is. You'll be able to see that.
As part of the RFQ process, we have them bring a pre-construction fee to the interview. So,
and I think the one thing I wanted to add too, and it's relative to, you know, even if you went the traditional bid build, you're like, well, we have to update plans. Typically, in a situation with these larger projects like this, the water wastewater people in that area won't necessarily get to 100% plans. You'll leave it to, what, maybe 90, 95, and you're looking for that CMAR to help you guide it all the way to the 100. So even though your plans are certified,
they're still probably only at 90 to 95% complete.
Because you leave that for the CMAR. That's part of the process.
Yeah.
So if you decided, we're not interested in that, the last 10% would be something that Gunner and his folks would put together in that time frame. So that's what I'm saying, that there's still things that can happen coincidentally with waiting for this magic list, right, between now and that time period, depending on which way you feel is the right way for the city bill.
Okay, Mayor and Council, to be clear about it's a good alternative, and I've got a couple cities that are using it, and I think there probably is a cost savings, at least in some projects, using that approach. That there is you're giving something up in exchange for that, which is what I think Joe is talking about, which is at least within some bandwidth, you're giving up ultimate control over some decisions that get made, right? I mean, the contractor, construction manager who is at risk, that is the whole point of this, has to make decisions within providing a final product that meets plans in a way that they, you know, meet that cap. And so they have some decision-making authority within that bandwidth. And I have no idea if on a project like this that matters or not, but there have been a couple of projects where some aesthetic decisions were made that, you know, were things that mattered, and so it's something to think about.
Question?
What month do we expect the PSIG list to come out and be available?
In this case, I would expect that we'd know with the IUP list that's released in August and September, usually. Last year, it wasn't until November, but usually that's released in August and September.
And is there any risk of losing the possibility of funding by going the traditional route, design build, or bid build?
No.
There's no risk to the funding. Either way you choose to go, we would just, if we're going traditional, where we finish the plans and then put it out for a bid and you look at low bid, we just wouldn't be asking to advertise for that now. It'll probably wait until the list comes, but Gunner would have to finish the plans. So we would say give direction to start finishing the plans because that's the direction we're going. If you're going CMAR, our direction would be let's start advertising for a CMAR individual who then has to submit a proposal. We have to put the RFQ out. They submit the proposal. The city interviews with the engineer. So either way you go, you're not jeopardizing this grant funding. It's just which path do you want to take depends on when your start line is.
I like CMAR.
Agreed. I think we can start down that road and pivot if we need to. Otto?
I would agree.
The only hang up for me is potential cost associated, difference cost associated with total project estimates between the two. Because you're not necessarily working within the free market, right? You're not putting it out for open bid and having competition drive your best total cost, which has pros and cons, right? How much of a difference would that be?
It's a fantastic question. So as part of the CMAR process, we still have to go out for bids on every aspect of the project itself. So the CMAR would be the one soliciting those bids. It just wouldn't be one big lump sum on bid day. It would be they solicit the bids, and we all analyze the bids together and see what those bids came in at for different sections of the project. Yep. So it's still as part of the free market. We still have competition driving prices.
Okay.
It's just done under a CMAR.
Okay. That helps a lot. So I'm good with moving forward with the CMAR.
Okay. You have direction.
So staff has direction. Bolton and Mink will start preparing the RFQ. And then, as we said, it goes through a process where we receive the information. There's an interview process. I'm sure we would be looking at utilizing the Public Works Committee unless the council has different direction as part of that process.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Gunnar. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
3.3, discussion food trucks, restaurants. Community Development Director Smith-Stratt.
Mayor, Council, this is a pretty narrow, tailored question. The EDA is recommending that the council consider going out and engaging stakeholders to have a discussion about whether or not the city should put into place a distance setback from where food trucks can operate and where a brick-and-mortar store is operating. And there are, as you can imagine, numerous different iterations that could take, where, how far, and under what circumstances, right? We know that there are brick-and-mortar restaurants in the city of Belle Plaine that are suffering right now. We're not any different than any other community. This is a tough time for restaurants because of inflation and because of uncertainty. So the first thing people start doing is pulling back from eating out in times of economic downturn. So I think that's what's occurring here, just like it is across the board. The EDA talked about this at two different meetings. We talked about it at the June meeting. They talked about it at the May meeting. They're not interested in getting in between businesses operating here in Belle Plaine. They want all businesses to succeed, whether it's brick and mortar or it's a food truck. They're just wondering if it's time to have a certain standard that separates the two under certain occasions. So that's your narrow question this evening. If you're interested in exploring that a little bit further, if you are, I think it would logically include bringing brick-and-mortar restaurant owners and food truck operators and members of the public and invite them to have a conversation. What that looks like, if that's a survey or if it's face-to-face or it's informal, I don't know, but that is the question. Do you want to have that public conversation?
Perfect. So, yes, we talked about this at EDA. Imagine a brick-and-mortar burger joint. Imagine a burger joint food truck pulling up on a random Tuesday and plugging in outside and selling the same thing. We're not talking about All Wheel Wednesday. We're not talking about special events. We're talking about a random day. So that's what we're talking about. So I will start with Councilmember Otto. Do we want to have a conversation?
I think we might be at the time where a conversation needs to be had about it. Obviously, special events are way different, and all of our things downtown, everybody usually sells products outside their brick-and-mortar store also, so I don't think that's the issue at hand.
Okay. Councilman Perwin?
I think there's a lot of complexity when it comes to how you frame that, what the distance, location, and parameters are around it, and the time and effort and energy that we're going to put forth in that is also challenging. You see them everywhere. You see them in Fleet Farms parking lot. You see them in Coburn's parking lot, close proximity to brick-and-mortar restaurants, sometimes not, like when that fire brick fire pizza comes to the hardware store. And the definitions and the outlines that you need to provide in order to, it seems complex. I'm open for the discussion. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm open for the discussion. It's just, I think it's far more complex than just simply drawing a line in the sand.
Councilmember Deese.
I would agree that it is very complex, and I'm not going to sit and pretend to know anything about the restaurant industry or anything that they're up against. So with that, I think welcoming that conversation would be important so that we can gain perspective from every angle. That's what we're missing right now, I think.
Councilmember Stacey.
I would hope we favor brick and mortar over food truck enterprises. I mean, the brick and mortar restaurants don't come in and out of the community. They're here, hopefully, to stay. So I would hope whatever we do would favor them over food trucks.
I mean, on the other hand, there we do have people that live in town that own food trucks that service our town also. So there's that.
Fine. Yeah, good. Fine.
And there may be other alternatives like days of operation or different things like that that you could do rather than an offset to help stabilize what's allowable and what's not and give brick and mortar even more of a shot at maintaining business as normal outside of special events and things like that. But I don't know. I think that's all up for discussion.
I mean, do food trucks, do they want to set up near a similar restaurant to draw on that business? You think, is that a business strategy? Anyone know that?
Probably based, I'm making assumptions here. It's probably based on traffic, foot traffic and visibility on the roadway. Are they going to be able to get into businesses and locations that will drive the most people to that location that they can probably park for free?
And sometimes private property owners pay them to operate as well. So there's across the board several different operating methods and rationale.
Okay. Well, I think we are open to have the conversation.
Okay. We'll try to work through the logistics and come up with something for you. I would envision joint EDA council.
Right? Perfect.
Okay.
3.4, 2050 comp plan, community development director Smith-Stratt.
Thank you, Mayor. Three of you, all five of you have been introduced to worksheets on community values in the various committees that you serve. EDA did not go through individual sheets and talk about values that spoke to them. Planning Commission did, and Park Commission did. And I think there's real value in just having a brief conversation going through, I have three different categories and several statements within those categories. If you would each, for each of the three buckets, choose one value statement that speaks to you and read that statement and just explain your rationale. Councilmember Otto, you've been through this. You did a wonderful job.
Do we have to do it again?
Yes.
Well, but EDA didn't go through and actually select. The value is in the talking.
Yeah, so first section is community participation. So if anybody wants to, we'll go and just read the one that's most important to you and why. and then each council member will move on and do theirs. Anybody who has got theirs done or is happy to go first.
Yeah, I'll start. Under community participation, I think the one that really resonates the most with me is working together towards shared goals, even when we disagree. And I would say especially when we disagree. You know, as a community, we bring, I've said this many times, a broad set of perspectives, and I think that's very valuable and very important. The even more important part is being able to then collaborate and develop strategies and everything from that point. So,
well, I like we provide equal opportunity for all voices to be heard.
You want to know?
As I said at Parks Commission's earlier today, I found this project extremely complicated and hard to answer. What lens do I view this, and where do you want the answer from is hard for me. I kind of compared our community to a lunchroom at a high school where there's several different tables and different groups and communities sit at different tables. And so depending on which table I'm sitting at gives you the answer from that table's perspective. And that's very hard to do. If you identify the bedroom community that we are, if you identify the farm community that we are, and the list goes on. But I do believe that this is what category did you want? Are we in community participation? I go to that we uphold the longstanding customs and values of the town. I think that holds true. You look at a lot of the historical sites, the Barbecue Days event and so on, this town holds on to its historical values and customs.
Councilor Morado?
Pass? I don't know, I kind of liked a lot of different ones, but the one that stuck out to me before was we strengthen families, faith communities, and civic groups as a foundation of community life, because that's pretty much what Belle Plaine is about. I mean, we do have churches, but we do have a lot of groups of people that do a lot of volunteering and helping people, and we got a lot of families here, and that's probably my number one concern is people's families.
Well, that was lame, because that was mine, so I agree with Luke. I mean, that one kind of, it just, foundation of the community, people, different organizations, different volunteering, different things that we do. So that's mine as well. So I guess ours wins because we have two. So there. Okay. On to the next one, community responsibility and well-being. Whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
I'll go, get it out of the way. We share a sense of place, community pride, and belonging, I believe. If you give the citizens of this town the opportunity to donate their time, money, energy, they would do so for a sense of belonging and a sense of bettering those around them.
Okay, I'll go. We uphold public safety, lawfulness, and personal responsibility. I think it's a key in every community that we are, you know, it's safe, and people are watching out for people and taking care of people.
I put that we collaborate and guide decisions through a shared understanding, which again kind of goes back to what I was saying in the last category, but we're at a point that's very critical for the growth of the community, and that's both with economically and within the community members themselves. So,
well, I like we create fair and just access to opportunity so everyone can thrive, because I still believe DEI, those are good things. And it's kind of in line with that.
Otto.
Well, I think my answer kind of changed after Brady talked. We share a sense of place, community pride, and belonging, because that is what Belle Plaine is about. And that changed since planning and zoning, so.
We got two.
All right, local stewardship. I'll start. We protect property rights, individual freedoms, and personal autonomy. I think it's key. I think it's people's freedoms and people's rights are important. I think the community, it's great to have a beautiful and nice community, but it also is, you know, there's freedoms in this country and in the city, and I think it's important to have those.
I put that we protect resources and opportunities for future generations, and again, at this point in time, we are looking at a lot of really big decisions and things that are going to impact our children and their children and people that do not live here today. So I think that's very important.
I will join Shane.
Wow.
Very well said.
Somebody pick mine.
Go.
Shoot. I did not pick the exact one that Shane did, but I did do we manage growth carefully to maintain character and sustainability.
Close enough.
It aligns with it, but I think city staff do a wonderful job looking in the future, analyzing it, and deciding what we need to look out for. Wastewater treatment facility is a prime example of that. Let's approach this early on and carefully as we manage this growth for the community. Those are just examples.
Oh, I'm going to stick with my initial one. We protect property rights, individual freedoms, and personal autonomy. That was my number one thing when we went over this in planning and zoning, because that is the foundation of you have a property, we want to be able to do things with our property, we want to have the right to do it, but also we belong in a community. So
did we nail it?
Well, thank you, because I do think it's the conversation that matters. You're not the only ones that are going to have this conversation.
Can't you grade us?
Well, you're not the only ones who have this conversation. This forms the basis of the growth survey that's coming out in a couple of weeks. So everybody listening, everybody in the audience, everybody in the reach of earshot will be able to have a conversation like you just had. And what is that? That's community development. Everybody says, what does community development do? This is the basis of that. Who are we? What do we want this community to be like? This is it. This forms the basis of our comp plan. So thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. With that motion, need a motion to adjourn.
I'll motion.
I will second.
Motion by Otto, seconded by Tease. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We are adjourned. Good evening.
Good evening.